That's the thing, that the it's just the capitalism based on consumerism. That is the modern culture that you see now. And that one, because of its being focusing at the senses, see, Vedic is going after Dharma. Most other, if they're more religious, it's also sub-religious, artha. But nowadays it's kama. Because the common person is not making money, he's spending money. But the business people, they're making the money. The common person doesn't make the money. The common person's always in debt and always owes money. So they've just figured out what to do. And then on top of that, then you advertise, you know, to get them to buy. But now you're going to have a lot of people out of jobs because technology also puts people out of jobs. So the businessman makes more money, the common person has nothing. Right? He loses his job. But whatever he gets, he'll spend on his consumer items. Right? So you get the common person to pay taxes. Right? And that those taxes pay for the people who don't have money. And then out of that, they spend something. Because the top guys don't pay any tax, or hardly any tax. The ones in the middle do, and the ones on the bottom do. If you get too far down, okay, then the taxes drop also. But the ones that make the serious money, they don't pay tax. They're too big. They always have these tax breaks, because the amount of money that they're generating is so great, the government's giving these breaks.
No, supermarkets and
yeah. No. It's just like in India. Any who exports, because they make such good returns, the government, then they don't. There's no charge. There's no tax.
And at the same time, they destroy the local business.
Yeah. So that's the point. Is the guys? There's people who are running it. Those supermarkets are run by big people. Like you don't see those people. Right? They're too big. You know, they put governments and other business and things in the front. Celebrities. The main thing is they put up is celebrities. Right? You know, like that. Actors, sports. So they put the emphasis there to distract people's attention from the problem of consumers. You have to do it because so many people are out of jobs and this and that and life's miserable. Is that you have to do that. Even the educational system is geared towards this consumerism. Is that you have to work at a job. So 9-to-5 job. So parents go to work 9-to-5, kids go to school 9-to-3. Right? They're put in the same mold. That kid will grow up, he's learned to sit behind a desk and not think. Right? Your government education is not meant for thinking. It doesn't take 12 years to teach the amount of English and math and science that they teach. Right? If you take a professor at a university, give him a 5-year-old kid and say, okay, we want you to, you know, get him finished with his bachelor's in English, like that. He wants a BA in English. It won't take 20 years. I guarantee that PhD will do it in 8, 10, 12 years. Right? So they have to keep the kids out of the market because a kid has no responsibility. Right? If a kid has responsibility, if he has no responsibility, he'll work for half wages. Because he just needs pocket money to spend. But the 40-year-old man or 50-year-old man, he's got a family to support. He's got mortgages to pay. So you can't have these kids on the market. Therefore, though the businessmen would like them, unions won't allow. Plus, then you also have to make it that the kids are going to spend money. You know, it wasted. Whatever money they do get from their parents or little side jobs, they're going to waste it. Right? You can't have them being serious. Now, if a kid is serious, like he wants to get married, you know, or a girl wants to get married, they're not going to let the money be wasted. Right? And then that means that boy has to have a job. So you can't let them get married until they're 18. You know what I'm saying? So the whole thing is geared all around the consumer thing. The whole society is based on that. And if there's inflation, then the stock market's working. You know? Because the stock market's an old thing. It was just, in the Vedas, they don't allow it. But it goes, the Romans had stock markets. You know, the Japanese had stock markets. And they traded on commodities that were real. Nowadays, you can have a stock market on a celebrity. You can buy and sell shares on a celebrity, and it has nothing to do with the God. It's just some, you just create a market, you know, because people have faith in it. So before it was in gold or things like that. So the economics, though, the economics are created by God. That works by Him. But the economics in the Vedic system are controlled. Every 10 days or every fortnight, the king would fix the prices of goods. Like that.
So there's an intervention of economy.
Yeah, but
it's not pure free market.
I mean, no. But even nowadays, it's not a pure free market.
Yes, I know.
Yeah, so it's just a matter of what you value and don't value. You know, you can't sell cocaine on the market. It won't be allowed. The government can sell it, but you can't sell it. You know, so it's restricted anyway. You can't have monopoly, you can't have this. You know, they have very strict rules on this. But that's to keep the stock market running. The Vedic is so that people get what they need at prices that are reasonable. Otherwise, Vaishyas will always jack it up. Right? I mean, as you go to this boundary wall here, you pay more for the stuff for less quality than if you go over to Navadvipa. Right? And that's devotees selling to devotees. Let alone non-devotees who couldn't care less. A bottle of perfume, the bottle costs more than the perfume. Right? I would expect now that the perfume itself costs $2 to $3, maybe $4. The bottle probably costs $10, $12, but they sell it for $150. You know? The starting price of really good stuff is around $90, $95. Right? I think so, no? You know, we don't know. Like that. Someone's up there like Angel, $150. You know. That I mean, the whole stuff together maybe costs $10, $12, $15. Maybe even less. I'm only projecting. Because there was a devotee who in the 80s was making perfume. He said the perfume costs around $1, $1.25. The bottle costs $5 or $6, but you sell it for $85. Because if you sell it for $10, then I think it's something cheap. So you have to sell it for that. Cause then they won't buy it if it's $10. If it's $80, then they'll buy it. You know. So the thing, they don't mind selling for, you know, they get 1,000%. They're happy. In the Vedic, you can only make 20%. So the government takes duties on things that are moving, and they take taxes off of things that are fixed. So farmer, he pays a tax of a certain percentage, right? But or who produce goods, they pay a tax a certain percentage. Some of them are as small as 2%. Some of them go up to maximum 25% in times of distress. But otherwise, generally 18%, 12%, you know, or less down to 2%, depending on the goods. Because certain goods you can sell, there's more markup. Certain goods there's not. They move more, they move less. And then then those that are moving, then in the cities, then the king sets prices. Because it costs this much, it costs you this much to transfer it, you paid this much, and you paid this much duty. And so you can sell it for this much. So therefore then they make their profit, the king has gotten his tax, and the person who has produced it has gotten his money. So everybody's satisfied. So it works, so there's no inflation. Prices may go up because there's less of the commodity, and it's rare, it costs, it's farther to bring, like that, but it's still, the prices are fixed, so people can afford it. Like that. So therefore, then you don't have to do all these innovative things. You don't have to advertise. You don't have to advertise rice because everybody needs it. You don't have to advertise clothes because everybody needs them. You know, like that. And so it's just like that. It's just a matter of the quality of the thing. It's good, people pay. It's not good, they don't buy it. You know, they're not told it's good, but it's not. And there's no false prestige about it. You know, the silk sari has some meaning. Therefore, it costs them 8,000 rupees. But a polyester, you know, knit tank top isn't worth anything. It costs $5 to make in Taiwan. but they sell it for $100. So that wouldn't be allowed in any country. People are being cheated. Shooters hardly make that much money anyway, so they're being cheated. You know, so the kings wouldn't allow that. Vaishyas cannot sell things that aren't useful. Right? You only have to advertise something that's not useful. Right? That's the thing. Something that you have to create a market for. That's what you advertise. Things that you don't, that people need, you don't have to advertise. You know? Unless it's a matter of it's something they don't know exists. Then there might be some advertising. But otherwise, it's advertising to create that you have to have this. You have to have something that doesn't exist. You know what I'm saying? Like you look at, you go drive around Poland, what do you see? Beer advertising. You don't need beer. You don't need cigarettes. You don't need the latest car. You know? But so they have to create a need. Because only if there's a need, then we'll act and buy.
There is also competition in companies.
Yeah, but have you ever seen an India competition? Have you ever gone into a market? Have you gone into a market? There's 20 guys selling the same thing sitting right next to each other. So you know, if you want to buy oranges, you go to this place. All the orange makers in the whole city will be there. Sir, if you want to buy furniture, you go to that place. All of them are over there. So there's competition. But all 20 of them are selling their oranges. Because you walk by the first one, you look cool and tough, you just look at them, and then finally you find someone that, you know, the way you put them, or you start to get used to them, and then about the fifth one, and you start looking at his oranges, right? Then he quotes you a price, because you're interested, so he quotes you a higher price than he should have. Then you show disinterest. The guy next to him catches that, quotes a price lower, you buy his. Another guy's even more clever, he'll undercut him. Then that sixth guy, that's the one you're going to go to next time. Then you'll only go and buy his oranges, because he gives the cheapest price. But someone else came from the other direction, and so the same thing happened at that end. Or someone else doesn't know what's going on, he just goes to the first guy and starts. So all 20 of them sell their oranges. So competition is very much there. Capitalism is the way Vaishyas work. They don't make profit, they don't work. So Shudras work by socialism. The Vaishyas work by capitalism, the kings work by monarchy, and the Brahmins work by what do you call it? And that's how they produce their money. And so their social means their political scene, then for the Vaishyas and Shudras it's a democracy. Because the others is they accept authority and respect authority more. While you get down there, they have that principle, but they have less faith, they have less trust. So they want to be part of it. So when you get down to the village level, then you create panchayats and things. You have to have 10 people, and they have all these different things, you know, in it. And then they do the judgment at the village level. And for the running of the kingdom, then one village has a leader, and then 10 village leaders, and there's one above them, and 10 of those is one above them, 10 of those. So depending how big your kingdom is, then you have so many layers. And that'll get to the king, who will have his lower court. And that's all the representatives, you know, of the Vaishyas and Shudras. Then they will present to the upper court, which means the king and the ministers, any of their difficulties or things like that. But the decision is made by the upper court. And the implementation of it is done by the upper court. They may do it through the lower court, but it's done by the upper court. So once it gets to that point, democracy is finished, then it goes to the monarchy. And the Brahmins are outside the whole system. You know, it's anarchy, but they work under God, so therefore it works for them. Because they are born to follow and teach the law. So they have to follow it. Because if they're not following it, then they don't have to be respected in that way or dealt with in that way. They're avoided. So even though they're free from it, they pay no tax, they're under nobody's law, but they're under their guru and they're under the shastra and they're under their community. So a king can't tell them what to do, but if they're not doing what they're supposed to do, he can tell them that they have to do brahminical work. But as long as they're doing brahminical work, the king has nothing to say to them. So therefore, what are the Vaishyas and Shudras have to say? So they're independent. So all four social systems happen perfectly together at once. So the modern means you take one of them, and one of them on its own will fail. So therefore, that's why you see it. At some point, the modern system that's running in the Western world will collapse, because it's running only capitalism. Right? It means your Middle Ages, you're only running monarchy. You know, and even up into the after Renaissance, only monarchy. But they didn't in any way support the bourgeois. So then they complained, they revolted, got the masses, and then threw them out. Right? It's all economics and stuff. It's not that somebody really cares. You know, those ones that are more clever, the monarchy's still there. Those that weren't, then they're out. Right? But it didn't work there. You know. China and Russia, then they tried socialism. Failed. People starved to death. Like that. China's smart is that they've opened up to capitalism. But they maintain their atheistic, and they maintain their social working for the state. They're just very clever. That's why they're still communists while the Russians are. Castro, whatever they say, is a communist, but they sell their cigars all over the world. They're doing serious business. You know, so, you know, he's smart. You know? Probably the only pure communists that are left around now, kind of, are the Bengalis. And they don't have a paisa. Even they're having to open up to business people. Because they see without business it doesn't work. You know? So you have to have all these things, you know. Or our devotees, they try to run just the brahminical thing, and the farms fail, businesses fail. Anybody who does good in business or in farming doesn't do it in any way, shape, or form connected to the temple. Right? It means they may give their money to the temple, but they are in no way, shape, or form under the control of the temple. Because devotees don't know business. They just go, give 50% of gross. You know? It's like, hey, you can give us a pay. Out of the gross, maybe, you know, a certain 20%, at best, 20% is profit. And they're saying, give 50% of gross. Or 20% of gross. So that's why not one sane businessman in our society does business anywhere near our society. So therefore, as a social system, we're failing. Right? We don't have a social system. We're what Prabhupada talks about, philosophy without religion. It's mental speculation. We don't have a religion. Our religion is Sanatana Dharma. It's not followed. Like that. Because no one wants to perform their duties. Because no one wants to be the Shudra. Nowadays it's okay to be a Vaishya. But if you go back in time, anything less than a Brahmin was like a no-no. And, you know, it was like Brahmin. Then somewhere in the 80s, then it was okay to be Kshatriya. But Vaishya was like, Then now Vaishya is okay. The Shudra, nobody will agree to that. No one wants to be a Shudra. They're too proud. But Shudra is only your economics. The Varna is only economics. Ashram is your spiritual status. It's nothing to do with it. So what's the one guy to do? It means he won't be the Shudra in the society, but he'll go out and get a job and work for someone else down at the grocery market. You know? So he's making his money as a Shudra. So that's all it is. If you're a Shudra, then the social systems, you have to listen to the Vaishya. That's all. Because the Vaishya knows how to make money. You know the art of doing whatever he wants you to do, but he knows how to make the profit. You can't make the profit. He knows how to make it. Therefore, you listen to him. You can't make profit if there's no justice. Right? So therefore, then the Vaishya has to listen to the Kshatriya. And the Kshatriya won't know how to perform his duties without the Brahmin. So therefore he listens to the Brahmin. Right? And the Brahmin has to listen to his guru and the Kshatriya. So it's the whole thing is just economics. Right? If you look at it that way. Yeah. Its ultimate purpose is for devotion, is that to engage your occupational duty in God's service. That's what the Bhagavatam opens for. But otherwise, it's if you just work within the purusharthas, then it's just economics. From dharma only, you get artha. The modern culture is not getting any money from what they're doing today. That's coming from last life. It's not coming from what they're doing now. What they're doing now is going to send them to hell. Right? That's karma. Right? It's just like you give an example. You go to work this week, right? You're working Monday to Friday, right? And Monday to Friday you're eating. But what money? This week's money? You work Monday, you're eating, and you buy stuff on Monday to eat from the money that you made on Monday? No, you got paid last week. Monday to Friday, you only get it something at the end of the week. So your money that you live on Monday to Friday now comes from last week. But because this whole thing of karma is not there, unless this is spoken, people are just thinking that I'm living off of my work this week. No, the work this week is the money you're going to get next week. You're going to eat off of what you do this week next week. So your eating this lifetime has come from what you did last lifetime. Whether you work or not, you're going to get your food. Right? It means you go back into the early 90s. The average person makes 600 zlotys a month. But to run a family, it costs 800. How did they live? Only by karma. Not by their job. Right? So that's the whole thing, is all these people are making money. It looks as though it's prosperous, but it's only because of their last karma of last life. Means your karma comes to you through another living entity. And the results of work comes through your work. Right? But it's not the work itself that's doing it. In fact, you're not doing it. You're not the doer. And you're not the cause of the result. But because of your desire, then the work was done. And because you think it's your work, you get the result. That's the law of karma. You do the work, but think it's not yours, it's God's. Therefore, you don't get the result. Therefore, at the end of this life, you go back to Godhead. Because you have nothing to come back for. Your investment is in next life, in going back to Godhead. Or the Karmakandis, they do their work here for the heavenly planets. Like that. So that's the point. Now, if you perform good work, someone will say, well, then why can't I choose bad work? And you'll just get, yes, you'll get whatever good you do. But at the same time, by bad work, you also lessen the results of the good work you're going to get. You know, it's just like, let's say, someone has done something and he's become a national hero. And then that night he gets so fired up and he goes down to the pub and starts a fight and kills somebody. Then tomorrow he's in the papers as a bad man and he's locked up in jail, even though he became a national hero. You know, if he hadn't done that sinful activity, he would have lived for a long time as a national hero. But because of the sinful activity, then it cut that. You know? It's just like you go out on a vacation and you take all your money with you. So you should be able to stay out there for a month on your vacation. But if you're not careful, you're stupid, someone will steal your passport and your money, and then that's it, your vacation's over. Or you go out and just throw it on, do one binge on one night at some, you know, pub and stuff like that, then finish. Then now you're, you know, next day you have to go back. So that's the point, is that whatever you do have coming through by last life, if you perform good works this life, you'll get the full amount. You know, so it should be, it's coming through nicely. But if you perform sinful activities, it will cut it down. Right? Kamsa says this. He says that Devaki is pregnant with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I could kill her now. But by killing a woman who is pregnant and under my care, my fame, my duration of life, my wealth, everything will be shortened. So therefore I won't do it. So he's such a good materialist that he'll be pious to extend his facility and enjoyment, because he's in knowledge. So therefore he can be a bigger demon. Right? While the modernists, they're small-time demons. They have no knowledge, they have nothing. So therefore they can't even make this choice that to be religious. Like you go to these big, wealthy families, you know, it's top, you know. I'm sure if you check, there's some religiousness or at least some morality there. You know, I'm sure the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds and all these Fords, their girls aren't out on the street. They're not doing all nonsense. They're not doing this and that. You know, they're very careful. These established, long-term, rich families, they're very, generally very moral and probably even very religious. You know, they just know that, you know, dealing any other way, you lose everything. They just know it.
And something further proves Max Weber's theory that the capitalism is a product of Protestant ethics.
Yeah, you could. That would be a very nice connection to that. That would be a very nice thing to pursue, because we are in our curriculum for teaching in the school. Then we approach history through religion. It's the world view through the eye of religion. What is the religion of why things go on? Like the French Revolution, one of the main things actually was religious dissent. Economics can be used as part of it. But as there was this whole fight between, I think, Catholics and Protestants that went on for 30 years, and the king didn't do anything about it, and people speak. Like that. So there's all kinds of things. If you go back, is the inventions, they do things, but these inventions come up because of change in religious attitude.
Kama generates
Artha. And Artha, if there's Artha, you can have Kama. No Artha, no Kama.
Yeah.
Because the point is you have no money, you don't get the girl.
It's like a demand and supply.
Yeah.
So
so the point is the smart person performs Dharma, then he gets Artha. So you'll find your big, rich families, they still do their dharma. It's the smaller ones, and you're, you know, up and coming, these shudras, this, that. And sometimes, you know, decent families, but they're not the really rich ones. Really rich ones are very careful. They know how much money I give away in charity, that much I get back. And if I give it to good sources, it increases. I've heard, I've seen devotees who are from traditional, you know, business families. Generation. I mean, that's their genes. They go back probably thousands of years. They're just business people. And they have no qualms in giving away any amount of money to a good cause. Right? Like that. They give away hundreds of thousands of dollars every year. Like that. They pick and choose very carefully where it's going to go, where they're going to think. Because they know that every paisa that's given comes back many, many, many fold. They just know that. That's why they're so charitable. These big business families are very charitable. But they only give to places where they feel the money is going to be really used, because they know then if they get benefit. Like that. And especially the more they understand the Vedic culture, then the more they follow this. So that's why in the Vedic culture, if you perform Dharma, then Artha is guaranteed. You don't need other things. Everything's already been invented. The best way is, it means they can't do this stuff, just like in Govindaji. You got into Govindaji in Vrindavan?
Yes.
So in the middle of there, if you look straight up, right in the middle, there's that nice arch thing that's there, that whole design. That's one piece of stone. People nowadays don't know how it got there. They can't build that nowadays. Even if they bring all their fancy machines, they probably have very difficulty putting that stone there. One piece of stone. You know. And you see, it's just, you know, standard engineering. That stone is there. That big, it's as big as this room. It's not light. So, where is the point? It means they had, before the British came in and started forcing people to use machine cloth. See, they grow the cotton here in India. Then they would buy it at them for dirt cheap rates. Then they would send it to England, mill it there, then bring it back, and then charge it to them at high rates because it's imported. That was one of the main things in the Gandhian movement. Yes. It's just economics. It's just that these people are British, everything is soft. So to make it like that, they had the finest dhotis and saris were made by a group of weavers that they would put a hole through the thumb, both thumbs, and they would put the thread through there because it was so fine that they had to weave it using their thumbs. And it was so fine, you could take a dhoti and put it in a matchbox, fold it up. A dhoti or a sari. You could put it, throw it out in the air, and just by going like this, it would stay up in the air. You know? Europe, the whole point of their whole going out and their ocean going and all these things and their prosperity and money, they built empires off of the spices that you got from India. So, where is the point that technology's got something better? My point is, what they had in India, nobody has had, and nobody has now. There's no one in the West that will eat as good a food as a good decent wealthy family in India that follows Vedic culture. Guaranteed. The wealthiest person in the West does not eat as good as you. Cannot. They don't have all the. They don't have the knowledge of what to do. The way you give Ms. Rothschild a potato. What's she going to do with it? She can bake it, put some butter on it, put some sour cream, maybe some salt, pepper, maybe a little parsley, maybe a little dill. Yeah, but I'm saying that's about it. You know what I'm saying? What else can you do? So all these other ways that you can make these different things and sauces and this and that, they don't know. They don't know. So therefore, where is the fine? Where is the cloth? Where is the things? It means the cloth that sells here, the silk cloth that sells here, I don't know what it sells from the West now, but when I last looked, it was 100 rupees a meter here. It was $100 in New York. Right? And your wealthy people were wearing silk pants. Yeah. So silk was here. And now that they're exporting, they do a decent quality there. That's what they people want exported. But the really fine stuff, they don't do, and you can't get it now. So you can't get better silk. You can't get better food. You can't get better stuff. Kama Sutras from India. Right? Westerners don't know beans about sex. Indians know. There's a billion of them here. So they know what they're doing. You know? So you don't get more karma. They're eating, you're sleeping, you're mating, you don't get better. Right? Here, we got this. Okay, this may be something. Okay, we put down a rug, then we have an underlay under it. Okay, that's as good as it gets in the West. Right? And this is not a Western rug. This had to come from. It's either a Persian rug or an Indian rug or, you know, something from over there. Maybe they manufacture it, but they probably don't. They manufacture it somewhere else in a third world country, at least. But they're handmade, right? Like that, you take the rug, look at this. The design here and the design here is the same. You know, it's exactly the same. You go into any rich man's house in the West, unless he's bought one of these rugs, if he buys the regular ones that they sell over there, and throw rugs, even if it won't look like this. Like this. And this is 25 years old, 30 years old, when they still used to make. And this, they probably had better quality. Finer. Like that. Now you go into a king's place. Now under this is going to be a sheet. Right? And under the sheet is going to be a mattress this thick. And that mattress is going to be the size of the whole room. And there's going to be sheets that cover the whole room. And there's going to be these over the whole room. And then what goes on top of this? Your furniture. Right? Your chairs and your tables and your whatever it is like that. And all of this is cleaned every day. That means, that's why you see these kings that had thousands of maidservants and manservants, because they had to change these every day. You know, and you got one room for sitting in the evening, one room for the morning, one room for the sun, one room for the cold, one room for the music. Because you only sit there half an hour, 1 hour, 2 hours, and then you go out and then they come in and change it. So you're going to tell me that there's need of technology when you got living like that? You go to a Gujarati house, every 45, in a traditional Gujarati house, every 45 minutes a new snack comes out of the kitchen. They don't even eat meals, they only eat snacks. So you think those men are going to go anywhere? Now I ask you, are there any Gujarati devotees from India in the temple? Not one. South Indians are in the temples, Marathis, Punjabis, Rajasthanis, not so many, but UP, Bengalis, but there's not one Gujarati devotee living in one of our temples in India. Not one. They can't leave. And then you're going to tell me they need technology? So that's the point. Vedic culture doesn't need it, therefore it doesn't change. Only when they give up the Vedic principles, then they accept technology, then it changes. But that's because it's not you've transformed Vedic, they've just left it. Transform means it changes. You go to Italy, you don't find any Romans. You find Italians. Like that. But in India, you find people, millions of people, follow Vedic culture.
But isn't it that all this infrastructure, technology, was planned for such climate? I mean, in India. For example, what about other societies in that time?
Other societies in that time?
In other climates, other climates.
Means human life, it's mentioned, I think in the Ayurveda, human life is, you can go as far north or south as the coconut trees and the banana trees still grow. Outside of that, that's meant for tribes. So if you look at it, Europeans are tribals. They're sophisticated, but they're tribals. Angles and the Saxons, what did they used to wear before? The Romans, when they came and conquered the Germans, what were they wearing? Just animal skins. The Romans weren't wearing. You know what I'm saying? Romans wore their dress. Maybe they wore a few extra togas. Maybe they wore a skin on their back, but they didn't sew it up, and that's all they wore. You know what I'm saying? So the point is that's what your modern culture is. Your Germans, your Angles, your Saxons. Yeah, that means they're a wild bunch. And they all come out of Central Asia. Yeah, that's what they're coming from. So when Parasaram went through doing his tour for 21 generations, done the Kshatriyas it could, they fled towards Europe. That means they went out through the Khyber Pass and went north. So they went into Central Asia. So the first ones just went through and went into Europe and settled, and those are what you know as the Celts. Your Celts, your Vikings, your those people. Because those all had the same common culture, basically. A little bit different groups, but basically the same, the demigods that worship, and this is that they lost so much. Right? But some of them stayed in Central Europe, and they came through as the second wave, you know, the second wave in Germanic, and they wiped out all the Celts, except for, I think, Normandy, Ireland, Wales, and Scotland. You know, and then Iceland, Denmark, and I think Sweden. Right? Everything else is Germanic tribes took over. So they're a bunch of tribals. You know, so tribals go and live in these areas, sophisticated, cultured human beings don't. You know. But the point is you could wear. Means Scotland. You can't get colder than Scotland. They wear kilts. They wear shoes, socks, and kilts. right? So you don't have to wear pants. To say that you have to wear pants because of the climate, they wear kilts. And the thing is in tradition, they don't wear underwear. It's considered low class for a man to wear underwear under his kilt. Like that. And it's pretty cold up there. So, therefore, to say that you have to wear pants or the shirts or this or that, you don't have to. You could wear something else. You know what I'm saying? And you could just wear animal skin. You know, except for the, you know, the green animal rights and all that. Then you go to Russia, you keep warm by animal skins. You wear those hats and those things around here and those, you know, those coats. It's just straight animal skin. So then if we want to say, okay, even if we want to say, okay, Indian culture is meant for India and that culture is meant for there, then stick to it. Why are they going to jeans? Why are they going to parkas and stuff like that? Why aren't they wearing their skins? You know? Why do they have to change their culture? Just because it's presented as that their culture is low class and the American culture is the best in the world. That's all. It's just Americans are so proud they can tell anyone they're the best. You know, they're gross about it. British are subtle about it. The French don't even talk about it. They just know they're the best. You know, you go like that. What was it telling me? You go to France, and even though they speak perfect English, they won't speak you in English. Because it's like below their dignity. You come to France, you speak French. You know, otherwise, why come to France? You know, yeah, you know, like that. So it's just, you know, like that. So it's then stick to then if we're going to do that, yes, then stick to your culture. But I don't find that happening either, because culture means work. Okay? The culture is design. Means you go there, they eat their salad, they eat the this, that. Like in India, they don't eat salad. Because they eat whole grains. They eat vegetables. Like that. They use spices. So they don't need salad. Because you can't digest salad. Right? Salad is bulk, it's roughage. But the Europeans have to eat it because of their diet. They eat meat and they eat bread. Both make you constipated. So if you don't eat salad, you'll die. You know? You'll die. So you eat salad to create the indigestion in the stomach that moves everything through. That's why when you eat it, but it's cold enough, it's done very slowly, so you don't notice it. But you eat salad here, then you see what happens. It blows you right out. You just eat it, bang, you're in the toilet. Because salad is meant for animals, because they have the stomachs to digest, break down the cellulose to get it in vitamins and minerals. We don't. We have to cook it. When it's cooked, the cellulose breaks down. So therefore, if you eat the vegetarian diet and all that, you don't need the salad. You can eat it if you like it, but you don't need it. So our diet will work in other places. Just the more cold it is, the more ghee. It's just like in winter here, you eat more ghee and more spices and more rich and like that. And then summer, you eat lighter, the opposite. So when it goes hotter, colder and those things, then you eat richer and more spicy and stuff like that. That's all you have to do. I mean, you have millions of Indians living in England, which is cold freezing, and they eat their Indian diet, and they're doing quite well. You know, they live in America, they're eating, they go to South Africa, they live everywhere. There's Indians everywhere. There's Russia, and they all eat their own stuff. And they're alive, and they're doing well. You know? So they're doing business, they're making profit. Right? All the motels in America are owned by Gujaratis. They call them Patel motels. Right? The diamond market in Amsterdam, in Antwerp, is taken over by the Gujaratis. Right? It used to be the Jews. Then the Gujaratis are more Jews than the Jews. So they got the market. You know? Means 60% of the people in Silicon Valley are Indians. And so it's so great and it's so expensive to keep them over there. Now they're moving all that stuff to India. Because here, if they pay them a lakh a month, it's nothing what they have to pay them in America. So they get huge money here, but it's cheaper for the companies. You know, so these Indians are living all over the world, and they're following their culture, and they're eating their food and everything, and they're fine. Okay, maybe I have to put on some boots, this, that, but I mean, if you want to live up there in the snow and all that, then yeah, why not? But you don't have to. Because the point is the West, you have to go out and live in the snow. You just have to go from your house that's warm, into your car that's warm, into your office that's warm. So technically, you could wear sandals. Right? I do it. I go to Kazakhstan. 15 below zero. It's snowing outside. I wear my peg shoes. I don't wear boots. They give me boots. This I don't wear. I don't have to. I'm never outside more than 5 minutes. And that's only because you're in Kazakhstan. The car's over there. You know? But you walk out of your house into your garage. Nothing. Get in the car. Drive out. And you go. You never need. So there isn't a need for all, because this idea is for us going out, health, this, that, because you sit behind a desk all day. You know, and if you're skinny, you're beautiful. You know? So therefore then, you know, all these things. Then you may need something that's that. But even then, you don't have to. You can go to a spa and run there. And then a treadmill. Plus you can watch TV. Of course, you don't get the fresh air. But you know what I'm saying? So whatever you value, and Kashmir is snows. It's a snow culture. They're Indians. They follow it. They eat rice. Their diet is rice. They're like, because it's a Brahminical culture, they eat rice. Bengali is a Brahminical culture. South is a Brahminical culture. They all eat rice. So there it's snow. That's there, but their meal is rice. You don't know the culture. Means you have rice, then you have things that go with the rice. You have dal, you have fish, you have vegetables, you have chutney, you have same in Manipur. You eat rice. Everything else goes with it. It's like in Europe, you eat bread, and then you have things that go on it. Or in Italy, you eat pasta, and then you have things that go with it. So the Brahminical cultures eat rice. They don't eat wheat. Wheat can be a snack. You can take it for breakfast, some bread or some chapatis or paratha or like that. But your main meal, your lunch and your dinner is rice. And that's snow up there. So it's not that you have to have wheat because it's cold and this and that. And their traditional shoes for going out in the snow are wooden shoes that have the bottom is quite big, like this. So it's a little bit, it's like a cup, like about this big and about this high. It goes out like this. You have one in the front, one in the back. Originally they had a peg, but now sometimes they put these. And so when you walk on the snow, it's on the top. It's like snowshoes. Okay? And they make huge woolen shirts. Their kurtas are big for winter. Big enough that you can pull it down to the ground. You can sit like this and pull it all the way down the ground. And then they keep a little pot. Everybody's got a pot. It's a little clay pot about this big and a basket with a handle. And they fill it up with coals. And you have little, you know, tweezers and you play with them. And they just keep it underneath the shirt. Mm-hmm. You know, so everyone sits around, everyone's got their own, and they play with it. Keep it warm. You know, so it's inside your shirt as well. So they don't heat the whole house. They just heat the shirt. You know. Or you go to Japan, cold up there. They also, you see, their wooden shoes. That's what they wear. They work in the snow. You know, because most people wouldn't go out in the snow. Samurais would go out in the snow. They're tough, so. But they have those wooden shoes, like that little thing, they work in snow. Of course, more cold, they look like a sock kind of thing. You know, so it's there. And they put the heater thing, same kind of thing, but they put it under the table for tea. You know, so they have a cloth and put their legs under it. Like that, or they put them in the beds. You know, that kind of thing. So they have their methods. So all these things, they still work today. But you have to have all this modern stuff. You don't have to. So that's an aspect. Like here, we have these windows. The breeze, you can feel the breeze go through. Right? There's no fan here. You go to any other building, and you have to have a fan on it. Now, if we close these screens, which are modern invention, this room gets hot. So you have to have a fan. This would be cooler if those top ones didn't have screens, because then all the heat would go out very easily. So this is how they get rid of the heat in the tradition before a fan. And if it's really hot, then you have servants who fan with the fan. You get these big, huge fans, big hands. Or you have like a rug, you hang your rug, and then somebody pulls a punkah wall in. So modern makes it easier, but you pay. It's not actually easier. You have the washing machine, you have the dishwasher, but you have to pay the bills. So therefore, you have to work. Before, the wife washed the dishes, she washed the clothes, and that you fed the wife, that kept it working, right? But now she wants all these machines, so then she has to go to work to pay for them. And because now she does no work, her health goes, so she has to go to the spa. She has to pay really dearly for that. You know, like that. And because they worked and dealt with natural thing and good food, then they didn't need cosmetics. Now they need cosmetics, they have to pay for that. So it's not that technology has made anything better. It's made people more rich, more wealthy. It hasn't made anything better. You know? It hasn't improved. Like you take Ayurveda and you take the Chinese medicine. This Chinese medicine is based on Ayurveda. You ask Chinese, doctors will say that. They said it comes from India, it's Ayurveda. But just they took out the mantras, because they chant, you have to chant certain mantras, like that. They took that out, dropped those 2,500 years ago. They stopped using mantras. And just by their own research, and they've come up with things by their own local herbs and stuff, and developed certain things. You know, and along the way, then they used to use the acupressure, which is the marma points. They used it in South India. But somebody had to do that for the king, but he wasn't authorized, because they had that social system. So only someone of the high caste could touch the emperor. So the guy was a good doctor, but he wasn't of the caste that could talk to the doctor. So he developed the needles. They were using gold. So he would touch the points through the needles. So that started that. But they can cure all kinds of diseases nowadays, cancer, this, that. So many things. So it was very developed. So in the way of medicine, in the way of food, in the way of culture, you don't get better, more developed music than Indian music. You know? You don't have more developed cuisine than Indian cuisine. You know, you don't have more refined clothes than the Indian clothes. You know, so what is it, you know, how to be beautiful, how to be things, you know, things like, where is it they know more? The common housewife in India from traditional families knows more about beauty care with natural things in the house than any woman in the West knows. You know, like that. They don't know. They don't know this. So, where is the development? Where is the what is better? So the Vedic cult didn't need to go to some other things. You know, you had the thing within that. There's always variety. Like in this rug, this came out of just some guy's mind. He just drew this, and the guy can draw millions of these. Like I was just hearing about one of our devotees. He's learning, you know, all this sculpturing and all this stuff with the Veda and all this kind of thing. His teacher, you give him a blank piece of paper, and he can just start drawing in either designs, either geometric or floral or animals or any combination, and fill up the paper. It's one of the exercises that we do. You give another paper, he'll draw it a different way. Unlimited designs that just create. So the creativeness is in there, but the technology, it works. It's the same. This rug is still here after 30 years. The machine weighing one will fall apart after a few years. A synthetic rug is going to fall apart in 5 to 6 years. That's why rich people won't buy it. Because they're gone. You know, your modern car, how long will it last? Not very long. You know? They have stuff, but they won't sell it. They have a ceramic engine. All the parts are ceramic, porcelain. The pistons, everything. So ceramic, the clearance, you can make perfect. You don't need what are those called? At the top of the piston. You know, those things. I forget what they're called. They're like washers, but they have a name for it. You don't need those in the ceramic engine. And because of the clearance is so thin, it doesn't get hot like the metal engine. And all these things, that it never wears out. So one engine would last a lifetime. That technology is there, but they won't sell it. No question. The guy who's invented it, they buy him out. People have known for a long time, I don't know, 30, 40 years, how to take water and burn that in a car engine. You can just go to your garden tap, fill up your tank with water, and they can take that water, split it into oxygen and hydrogen, and burn it, and run your engine. You don't need gas, you just need water. And when it splits it, then it burns it, and it also still produces some water. And I forget what it produces, but it doesn't disturb the environment either. No, they do it through electric. They do some kind of system, but it's not difficult to do. So these people are all bought out because the economics is all there for the petrol. If you can run your car off of water, then the richest company in the world are the petrol companies, the most powerful. Yeah, means the American president, Shell, and I forget, I think it's a German company. They're the most powerful people in the world. The CEO of those two oil companies, the American president. Yeah. So that they are the top people. They make the decisions what goes on in the planet. Okay. So why are they going to allow these things to happen? They won't. You know what I'm saying? So therefore technology is only presented that it's something special. That's why Bhaktisiddhanta says, when he talked to him, Prabhupada, when somebody asked Prabhupada, what about the wheels of progress? Prabhupada says, stop those wheels. Bhaktisiddhanta says, when he talked to him, said, Western culture must be crushed. Because they don't know what they're doing and they're destroying everything. So there is nothing gained by technology. It changes cultures, definitely. That's a whole science like that. I think it was someone was doing research. I forget, it's somewhere, I think, in the Himalayas or in Tibet or something. There's a little box that they keep butter in because it wouldn't keep. And because of that box, then there was all these people who would make it, the way they would live in the house, the whole thing like this. When they came along with the refrigerator that sold butter that would keep like that, then that box disappeared and the whole culture changed. So you find these things. They do change the culture. But that's because people leave their culture. Not that it actually itself is able to go in and influence, it destroys. So that's the change. That's why you see change. It destroys the previous one. Does that make some sense? So that's the whole thing. It's that just like you take this. If you have the principle that the only people that should die in a war are warrior men. Therefore, you have all your wars outside the city in open areas where no one will get injured. Right? So then, how much technology do you need for that? You don't need so much. You know, even if you go to guns, then you don't need more than that. But then, it doesn't, there's no chivalry there. The taste is lost. But whatever, you can do something. But if you're going to go into the cities so that everybody can be killed and destroyed, then you have to have this modern technological weapon. But if you have, so therefore the values have changed. They don't mind. If there was no bad publicity, they don't mind blowing up places and killing women and children and civilians. People don't mind doing it. It's only if there's bad publicity, then they avoid it. The countries are worried about it. You know what I'm saying? So So therefore, you have to have a cruise missile. You have to have this. You have to have that. You don't. Otherwise, you don't need it. If people just go out into an open field and fight, then you know you don't need more than standard stuff. Because in the previous time, is you stormed a fort, but the fort shouldn't be destroyed, because you're only trying to either make that king submit or put in a new king. But the king still has to have protection for his people, and he needs support. So you don't want to destroy the fort, because if you destroy the fort, the people cannot be protected. Does that make sense? So in the Vedic culture, there's no question of destroying the fort.
Diva is called Dhurandhara. With me, Vedic Veda, Diva is called killer, destroyer, coach.
But that doesn't mean you wipe out the fort. You may break down the gate. You know, destroying a fort means you destroy, you get inside it, you destroy the people that are there. You know, like that. But you spend the demons, they like to break things up and stuff. But the Vedic thing is you just harass and things like that. You ruin his water supply, you cut all his grass so he can't get it. You can't get any supplies, so you starve them out. If they won't come out and fight, then you starve them out. But the idea is the fort should be left in place. Otherwise, then the next person you put on the throne, there's no fort. If he has no fort, then means you have to build it, because now he's your vassal. So you got to spend your money, or he's got to spend his money to build it, but he could be paying tax for that money, so it's not even good economics. You know.
And according to what Maharaj said, means that in the Vedic times, the society also was in war. There are wars.
Wars are there, yeah. But the war is there only because the next kingdom is not being managed properly, or that they're causing trouble for you. It's either you're a bigger king, they're not managing properly, their citizens are suffering. Like that. So therefore you go in, kick him out, and put in a good king. Like Jarasandha, he's harassing everybody. You go in, they just killed Jarasandha, put his son as the king, but now his son will be a vassal to Maharaj Yudhishthira. Leave everything in place. So there's no need to go in. People just go out and war and this and that. These are tribals. You know, the Muslims would do that, the British do that, these people do that. The kings wouldn't have to do it. If there's a kingdom next to you and he's trying to get your land here, then you may fight back. But there's no need. Prabhupada explains that. There's no need to fight with the next kingdom. Unless there's something wrong with that king. Either he's bothering you or he's useless. You know? So if the king has the ability, then, and that, he wages war. If he doesn't, then he sits quiet. You know? Because generally through diplomacy is a much better way of managing things. War is the last option. Because war is always uncertain. A strong enemy could lose, and a weak enemy could win. So therefore, war is the last option. Diplomacy will always be used first. If that doesn't work, then one should be ready for war. Like that. Because the two best methods are diplomacy and war. You know, Dana, Beta, they're okay. But conciliation and war, those are the best. They get the work done the best. But war should always be avoided. But if there is no other option, then the king is with full confidence and focus goes to war. Okay. But otherwise, he would rather make peace or take shelter with a bigger king before war. His wars that lose people, he lose money. You know, so much suffering is there. Because all those soldiers had wives and families. You know, so like that, you want to be careful. So therefore, war is the last option. You know, so you see in the Purana, there's not much war. It's only when the most wars you hear about are between the demigods and the demons. You know, but those forts are destroyed because the demons are flying in the sky and they're not supposed to be there. The demigods never go to the lower planets and attack the demons. Never. When the demons come in their flying forts, then they destroy them. Yeah, because they're not supposed to be there. Right. When the demons harass and set up them, then they don't just kill, they can wipe them all out. Because they're not supposed to be there. You know, what is it, Navita Kavachu or something? 60,000, I think Navita Kavachu, 25,000 like that. They would take shelter in the ocean and come out and harass the demigods. So Arjuna killed them. So you wipe out all of them. Because they're not. It means that they stay. The demons can stay in the lower planets, they do all the nonsense they want. No one will bother them, because that's their business. That's where they live. That's where they stay. But as soon as they come out of where they're supposed to be, just like the tribals, they stay in the forest. Nobody, the kings don't care what they do. They hunt. They eat their local rituals for this. How they marry, don't marry. They don't care. But if they come into the cities or they bother the citizens that move and traveling and merchants, then they're in trouble. But what rituals they follow is how he does. In fact, if the king becomes in charge of them, then he authorizes their own tribal rituals. They can do those things they want. But it's still, it can't be against Vedic principles. You know, they can't kill cows. You know, they want to eat pigs, they want to eat dogs, they want to go out hunting, you know, animals, that's okay. Can't eat, kill cows. You know, can't eat people. That's not allowed. You know, something like that. You know, so nobody bothers the hunters. They want to kill animals, they do. But they only kill what they eat. You know, they don't make slaughterhouses. So that's the culture is, it's complete in itself because it's centered on the Shastra, everything's taken care of. So it works. The non-Vedic, then it becomes speculative because they try this, it doesn't work, then they try that, it doesn't work, they try this, it doesn't work. And they always have to keep moving and changing whatever works. Because the point is at least in the capitalistic culture, is to make profit. So whatever makes profit works. So if people are in today into organic, then you know that's the direction it goes. But previously, organic was like, who eats organic? You know, everything that was chemical and man-made, that was the thing. So then everything went that way. It used to be, you know, cotton was normal. Then when they had synthetic, then cotton was cheaper, and synthetic cost more. Then as it develops, because everybody's into it, then synthetic now is cheap, and cotton is expensive. Like that. So it's just whichever way it goes. Now, if no one will buy synthetic, then the prices of cotton have to go down, because everybody has to move into that market. So then cotton will become cheaper. But now, if most make synthetic, only a few make cotton. So therefore you pay extra, because there's no demand for it. So it's just, all it is therefore these economics, and because they become atheistic and they've given up religion, they don't have culture. It means, like you were saying, this modern thing is, you were saying, like Protestant, because anything goes. There is no Protestant clothes or food or music or dance or sleeping or mating or defending. They don't have it. There's no laws. Jews have laws. I'm not even sure. I think Islam has laws on this thing. But there's no laws in these things in the Protestant. So therefore, that means then business can do anything. So it's a good point. Those two probably go together very well. Because of the Protestant religion, therefore the bourgeois can do anything they want. Because before then, you know, the religion was the comment, and you had to be religious. You know, you had to make a profit, but you couldn't be irreligious. But with the Protestant, then there are no rules anymore. Just faith. That's all it is. It's just your faith in God, your prayer to God. That's all it is. So then that means also then the culture goes. Because before it was all the arts, fine, everything was connected to religion. You know? And then with the Protestants, there's nothing connected to religion except for your faith. You know, what's Protestant art today? What's it? There isn't it. So then it all goes. It all disappears. That's a very good thing. I like that. Nick is like a pro-life. They're all Catholics. You know. You know, the abortionists are all Protestants. You know, or atheists. You know, but those who, the biggest group that pushes the pro-life, they're all Catholics. So you can see is that there's a change in these things because of how they follow the culture. You know, these different societies like you talk about. Basically, it comes down to the mimamsa. And many times what happens is they change things. And like Maharishi Ela is for economics. You know, they just found Vedic culture selves, and they're smart. They got top people, intelligent people. But it's all men. It's always been. So, you know, therefore they will make decisions based on economics. Well, the Vedic culture has to be based on Dharma. If it's not based on Dharma, it's not Arya. It's not Vedic. Means there are those who tend towards economic viewpoint, the Vaishyas, but they're kept in line by the Kshatriyas. And one devotee, he used to preach to the kings in Rajasthan, the royal families. And he was telling me about one conversation where the king was saying just how important it is for the kings to keep the Vaishyas in line. Otherwise the Vaishyas will always go off and do crazy stuff. He just says it's such an important thing. The kings always have to keep their eyes on the Vaishyas. Because they'll always do stuff that's improper, just to make money. You know, and these were people who, they were kings. They only stopped being kings in 47. Otherwise they were ruling kings then. And so he was preaching back in late 70s, early 80s. So he would have been talking to the fathers, who were the kings, or their sons, who were the princes, who were heard and known. Like that.
In Rajasthan I spoke with Jats and Haryana also. The attitude is now only, that comes from Kshatriya. The attitude is now only masti, enjoyment. Masti.
Yeah.
Making money and masti.
Yeah, and enjoyment. Yeah. Because they're not religious. The religion's been lost. Because India is a secular state, so it's kind of like you lose these things. So know who's preaching to that. The Jats are the non-ruling Kshatriyas. So they would be what, you know, like in European would be called the aristocracy. You know, because the one son inherits the throne, he's nobility, his other brothers become aristocracy. So I guess that would be in India what we call Jats. That's somehow another way. Yeah, and that's just, they've just taken that move up. So that's why India's rule. because they're not following the philosophy. So that was all ruined basically by, you know, the Mughals and the British. And you don't find such hedonism in the South, because the Mughals never got down there. So the culture's still more intact. Very confused. But it's still more intact. It's going now, but it's more intact. But the North, you had 1,300 or 1,500 years of Muslim influence. You know, and then 250 years of British influence. But of course, the strongest influence has been the last 8 years of, you know, Western television. Star TV, MTV, HBO, these ones. They've probably done the most damage to India, you know, in the shortest possible time. Because the Mughals, they saw that the Hindu culture was superior, so therefore they kept it, but just used it according to their rules. So therefore they saw the music was superior, the cooking was superior, everything was superior, the clothes, that, so therefore they adopted it, but made their adjustments because it was a bit too subtle. The Hindustani music is Vedic music, but they've made some slight adjustments to it, just to make it more to their liking. Like that. But otherwise it's the same. You know, you see they wear the same clothes and stuff. And they've exaggerated, they like shirts and all that. But they wear the same fine cloth.
What
is
the beginning of casteism? How the castes were created?
Caste means?
Caste, caste.
It means those are eternal principles. They're going on in the West right now, but they're just not scientific. That's the difference. It means you have your intellectuals, you have your administrators, you have your business, and you have your common man. There's not a fifth group of people. Like that. There isn't, even in the West. But it's not so scientific, so some of the duties get mixed around. It's not so clear who's on top, who's in the bottom. Like that. But it still has four lines. You still basically kind of have your four options. You have your students, but they're not necessarily celibate. But those who are smart know to be celibate. That's why they go to private schools. Like that. You have your grihasthas, you have your retired, and you have your priests. So some groups are celibate, some aren't. You know. But it's there, the Vedic. So that's always been there, that's the internal principle. But where it's done by birth, then that would be a Kali Yuga principle. Just as they lose their qualities, the Brahmins don't have their qualities and this and that, so it's only by birth they maintain their prestige. Like nowadays, you know, you have guys who drive rickshaws, but they have Brahmin friends. You know, or they do business, but they don't marry their own Brahmins. They only marry Brahmins. You know, even in South, you have the converted Christians, but they're converted Brahmin Christians. So their church only converted Brahmins go to. And when they marry, they'll only marry converted Brahmins. I know one devotee. He's from, you know, that kind of background. And when his mother heard he was going to get married, she wrote him a letter, "Remember, you're a Brahmin, so only marry Brahmins." They're Christians. You know? Like that. So, therefore, the prestige is, at the end of Kali Yuga, when Kalki comes, he's born in a Brahmin family. So even though the whole culture will have been shot for years, you know, probably tens of thousands of years, still, Brahmins, the Varnashram thing is still being placed. No one follows it, but it's just a prestige. So it's an eternal principle. It's always been. As a Dharma Shastra, that's the whole thing is the explanation of the whole Varnashram system. That's how Manu is. Right? The first chapter is creation and the origin of the law. The last chapter is basically how to emancipate, how to get out of it. Transcendence, the laws of karma, how they work, how to interpret laws that you don't have a detail for. Chapter two is about brahmacharis, 3 to 5 is Vrihaspas, 6 is Vanaprasthas and Sannyas, 7 is kings for their lifestyle, 8, 9, and 10 are the duties of kings in effecting justice, like that. Then 10, like, that was 7, 8, 9, 10. I think it's 8, 9. Yeah, 8, 9. 10 is what the varnas do if they can't do the normal duties. What are their alternates? Alternates. Then 11 is prayaschitta. If you don't perform your duties or you have some sinful activity, what to do. And then 12 is liberation. So all it describes is varnashram. So it's an eternal principle. Man is for the four ages. So in all respects. So it's not that time that it started. They were always there. But that was by guna and karma. The Vedic is guna and karma. This thing of that's daiva varna ashram. So when it's by birth, that's asura varna ashram. So that's always been there. And in the West, it's also there. You're an academic. And you'd be called in that Western society an academic. Right? You're part of the academy. So you're a job. You're a caste. You know, the politicians and that, it's a caste. Business is a caste. Skilled and unskilled laborers, blue collar, white collar workers, they're caste. If you're clever, you can change. But that's because you have the ability. So that's Vedic. Vedic is just what ability you have, you do that. You don't have the ability, you don't do it. But generally, probably most of the time, what your parents are, that's what you are. But sometimes not. Because just by bad something you've done, then you'll be born in a low family, though you have higher quality. So sometimes you see that. And then from that, they'll move through. So it's only brought out about their positions, just like Roma Harsha in the Sutta. He's a Sutta. So Suttas aren't part of the Varnashram system. Suttas are outcasts. But because the father is Kshatriya, the mother is Brahmin, then if they have Dvija tendencies, then they're counted as Dvijas. And they'll go to the Gurukul, but they got all the same training. But if they don't, they fall out of it, then they're travelers, then they're chariot drivers. Or there are certain kinds that they trap animals. So just depending upon where the mentality is. So it could be Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Shudras, or outcasts.
So the scheduled caste also existed in Vedic time. Scheduled caste.
Yeah, those are always there. Because they're a species of life. Right? A Brahmin, a Kshatriya, a Vaishya, Shudra, they're species of life. They have a mentality, they have a way they work, they have a way they look. You can tell by looking what they are. So when you mix them, then you get something else. If you have a salty preparation, you have a sweet preparation. You mix it, you have a chutney, which is a different species altogether. But the point is just because you're born in one family, that doesn't mean that's where you belong. You may have the nature somewhere else. You fit wherever you fit. So you fit wherever you fit. But the point is, it's like Roma Harsha in the Sutta. He was acting as a Brahmin. He was one of Vyasadeva's main disciples. He was given the Purana as his to protect. So all the Puranas are spoken by, basically except for Bhagavatam, are spoken by Roma Harsha in the Sutta. Bhagavatam is spoken in Bhagavatam, and I think, and Mahabharata is spoken by Ukashava Sutta, his son. But they're all spoken by Sutta Goswami. all of Iran. So he was given that, and he was accepted as a Brahmin because he acted as one. But as soon as he didn't get up and Balaram walked in because of his pride, because he's mixed with Kshatriya, his father's a Kshatriya. So technically, seed, he's a Kshatriya, but he'll have the nature of his mother. So that was more prominent, so therefore he took on the flavor of Kshatriya, I mean Brahmin. But he still had that Kshatriya pride. So by the rule, he's on the seat, he doesn't stand up to nobody. But he forgot that God made the rules, so you stand up to God. So he got killed. And then immediately everyone go, well, he was low-born anyway. So therefore you see in the Mahabharata, they'll talk low-born about Karna, because he acts as a low-born. He acts as a chariot driver. No king walks into assembly unannounced, uninvited, slapping his arms and then saying this and, you know, making comments about the acharyas and saying, I can do whatever he does. No Kshatriya does. No Kshatriya. That's why the Pandavas treated him as a Sutra. Because his mentality was that of a Sutra. At the same time, it's because he was born, high born, he actually is a Kshatriya. But he was born out of wedlock. So Gandharva marriage means the son will be of lower grade. You know? And not only that, he's born before she's married. So she's of the 12 sons, she's you know, born in the house. Actually, she's born before marriage, that's one son. So that's not even counted. They can't be heirs. So they're relatives, but they can't be heirs for the throne. Technically. Like that. Means a son born of a lawfully married wife who's a virgin of equal nature to that man. That's considered a real son. Then there's 11 other sons that you can have. Adopted, this and that. And born before the girl was married. Born when, means you came with the girl, Sahoda. She was pregnant when, and you don't know whose kid it is. It's maybe yours, maybe someone else's. Or you've already married her, but by adultery she's had a kid from someone else that's born in the house. So he's one of those. So technically, therefore, that bad nature comes on him. Even though technically he should be of high birth. Kshatriya nature. But it's polluted because of the low-born aspects. Therefore, the Pandavas see these natures and they deal with them like that. Ekalavya. He came. He's a son of an Ishada. He's a prince. But he acted as one. Therefore, Drona could see he doesn't have the character, so he was rejected. And you see, he goes to the forest and practices bows and arrows. He doesn't have a bow. Doesn't follow any sadhana. All he does is shoot arrows. So he's a shooter. He's a kind of. You know. The Pandavas and all them on the battlefield, they take bath every morning. They get up, they do the yajnas, they give charity to the Brahmins. Then they go out on the battlefield. You know, this guy just sits there and years just shoots arrows and stirs kalvadik with kalvadik there and fucking carries out of that. He's in the shop. And that group of Nishadas, they were inimical to the Kuru princes. So if you teach him, then they'll just wage war. They're not grateful, these people. They're Nishadas. You may have a king whose subjects are Nishadas, like Nala. He was king of the Nishadas. But he doesn't act like one. He acts like a king. But Ekalavya was a Nishada and acted like one. Nishada means as the father's a Brahmin, but the mother's a Shudra. Okay, we should probably stop there. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samavita Bhakti Vrinda ki, and I go with it.